Warmly welcome. As you know, the European Union will attend the Copenhagen Conference next week. We agreed upon a very strong mandate coming to Copenhagen already at our October summit. We reconfirmed that mandate, especially on the proposal to move from 20 to 30% if other developed parts of the world will make the same kind of contribution. It's a firm commitment to play a leading role when it comes to climate issue the coming week. For that reason, I'm particularly satisfied to be able to present you the global figure for EU's contribution when it comes to fast start financing for adaptation, mitigation and capacity building for the years 2010 to 2012. The total EU figure amounts to 2.4 billion euros per year, and it was also possible through the night to get contribution from all 27 member states and from the Commission. And we are, of course, very pleased and satisfied with the fact that we made contributions from all member countries, and that we also now show leadership in taking our fair share of the fast start money that we know are important to get the global agreement in place. And we, of course, urge other developed parts of the world now to make the same contributions so that this will add up. We mentioned 5 to 7 billion a year in our mandate in October. If that could show to be 7 billion, we have taken our portion of that. That would be very good for getting a climate agreement in Copenhagen. Just to remind that this is one of the financing efforts that we need to get the agreement in place. The other one is, of course, the midterm financing, which has been referred to as 100 billion, and we say the same thing. We are ready to take our fair share, but we need also the contributions of others. Well, this has gone very quick for the Swedish presidency. We are already at the end of our fourth formal and probably last European Council. Just to mention a few things that we've been working with during our Swedish presidency. It was very much based on the institutional issues. If you remember, we appointed a new Commission president. Well, the incumbent actually got re-elected, which we were very grateful for. And after that, we had to convince all member states to ratify the Lisbon Treaty. And we were very glad to get that in place on the 1st of December. We then could appoint the new president, Herman Van Rompuy, as council president, and also to nominate the high representative now coming into the new commission in Catherine Ashton. We have agreed on the guidelines for the future external action service, and we have also agreed upon an EU mandate bringing us to Copenhagen. We have adopted the Baltic Sea strategy, and we have adopted the Stockholm program, and yesterday we agreed on exit strategies and financial supervision as a follow-up on the financial crisis. We have delivered what we prepared to deliver during the Swedish presidency. This has been possible with the help of my colleagues in the European Council, to which I'm very grateful. And a very special thanks also to José Manuel Barroso, who has been a great supporter of the Swedish presidency, helping us to push through with all of these matters. He always refers to that. I think he's I'm council president number 11 or something, which must be quite an interesting experience. But that experience has been a very good help for the Swedish presidency getting everything in place. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you very much. Let me begin with a word on Fredrik Reinfeldt and his team. Tack så mycket, Fredrik. Thank you very much for the superb job of the Swedish presidency. You have delivered every one of your objectives and indeed ensured a smooth transition to the Lisbon Treaty. I know that at times, Fredrik, you were running what appeared to be a recruitment agency for top jobs, but it was indeed more than that. It was to inaugurate a new phase in the European Union. And I have to say that Fredrik Reinfeldt's leadership and the Swedish presidency has been decisive for Europe over the last 6 months. And this is very well illustrated by the great results we have achieved today. In fact, I'm delighted that we have achieved an ambitious figure on fast start financing that exceeds what could be expected from the European Union. At least it clearly above the initial assessments that we had some months ago. You remember that when the Commission came with that reference value of 5 to 7 billion euros, that was considered excessive, but in fact now the European Union is ready to pay its fair share. And this is so important for developing countries, especially the poorest, the most vulnerable. I think about African countries, the small island states, whose future depends on immediate action. We hope now that others will match our figures and our ambition. Finance is key to getting this deal done. I'm especially pleased that we have also reiterated our commitment to longer-term finance for developing countries. As I've said very often, climate change is not just this Copenhagen conference is not just an issue very important on environment, it's also a development agenda, an extremely important development agenda. And I'm confident that this latest commitment can kickstart the end game of these negotiations. In Copenhagen, negotiations will now move into a new phase with the tabling today of the first draft text. Copenhagen must light the road to a legal agreement that will respect the 2 degrees limit. I'm also very pleased that during this European Council there was a discussion on the future economic strategy, and I can say that generally speaking, all leaders backed my idea of having a new strategy, the European Union 2020 strategy. We will discuss this further at the European Council, informal European Council in February. Anyway, I think I can say that there was an endorsement of the idea to come with this post-Lisbon strategy, the new European Union 2020 strategy that basically keeps the commitments for Europe, global competitiveness of Europe. The European Council has also fully supported the Stockholm Programme for an area of freedom, security and justice. This is extremely important. This has a direct impact on people's lives. As the conclusions themselves say, the challenge is to ensure respect for fundamental rights and freedoms and integrity while guaranteeing security in Europe. And as you know, with the Lisbon Treaty, there are now much more competences at European level in this matter, so I'm extremely pleased that the European Council unanimously endorsed the proposals of the Stockholm Programme. So very good results. Thanks again to Frederick and the Swedish presidency team.
Wolfgang Preußel, Financial Times Deutschland. I'm over here. I have a question for both gentlemen. In the discussion about the economic situation yesterday, a number of prime ministers, I think, explained that due to the very difficult situation in budgetary terms, they had to impose drastic cuts in their budgets and decrease by in a drastic way salaries of their state or national officials. At the same time, EU officials are about to have a pay increase by 3.7%. So I would like to ask both of you, what do you think the political message of this is in times of a crisis? Do you not think that a major European crisis applies and should perhaps change this formula? And how do you think this is going to be perceived by those who have to accept cuts in their salaries, national officials or others in the EU? Thank you.
This matter was not discussed. Anyway, let me tell you about this. The salaries of the European civil service is determined by exactly the changes in a basket of countries. So if the member states increase their salaries, the year following, that it will be applied to the European civil servants. So, and in fact, this is a regulation adopted by the Council, so it's a legal text, and we have to respect the law. It's not a political choice. It's simply the implementation of the legal commitments, and we cannot go against the law. But so if the member states, they reduce the salaries of their civil servants, there will be automatically a reduction in the civil servants at European level. So there is not a distinction about it. It's a basket of countries, and that's only about implementing the legislation. And as you understand, we have to support the idea that the legislation has to be implemented. No one can sustain the idea that we have to go against the law in the European Union.
Okay.
Darren Ennis of Reuters. Two questions. First on climate. Of the new funding, how much is really new money and how much will come from existing aid budgets? And on the financial crisis, why have EU leaders decided to pursue this Tobin tax, this tax on transactions, given the fact that at the G20 the United States has already said it is not willing to support such an idea?
First of all, the 2.4 billion is a combination of new and old resources, you could say. But the thing is that we direct it to the years between 2010 and 2012 and to climate adaptation measures. So this is the importance, that is pinpointed resources, climate-linked between these years. It's very much a discussion on when you take the decision. If you take the decision on Monday, on Tuesday you could say it's old money. But that's a very tricky discussion. I mean, the importance is that it's money that we actually now pinpoint for the climate issue in this fast start contribution. Then we made a reference to what IMF already has been given as an assignment. So this was nothing new. We also pointed out that we have asked the Commission to also look through innovative measures of financing. So we did not make a new decision. We made reference to both the Commission and to the IMF on what has already been taken decision before.
Let me just add the point. I mean, honestly, if we want to help developing countries, we have to find additional sources of financing. In the current situation, with our budgets, not only in Europe, but developed countries, it will be extremely difficult to ask for any additional efforts. That is why there is this idea of innovative financing. And in fact, the European Council today encourage the IMF to consider the full range of options, including insurance fees, resolution funds, contingent capital arrangement, and the global financial transaction levy in its review. And this is independent from the issue of the support for climate change. This is in general terms. Know why? Know what happened with the financial sector? If I may say personally, I think it makes sense that that sector that created such a problem for our economies, that our taxpayers are now suffering the situation of the same mistakes, to put it diplomatically, that were made by the financial sector, that now the financial sector also gives a contribution to the overall economy. And that is the way, that's why, in fact, there was support for this idea. Apart from the ideas of innovative financing that we'll have to explore to see if there is a way of finding new sources of funding for developing countries.
Johanna Jonsson here, Swedish Television.
En fråga på svenska till statsminister Fredrik Reinfeldt.
I'm going to speak Swedish and I'm addressing myself to both.
Hur bedömer ni möjligheterna att EU-ledarna nästa vecka i Köpenhamn kommer att komma överens om att gå upp till 30% utsläppsminskning?
Do you think they will be able to stick to the 30% limit concerning emissions?
Vi måste komma ihåg att
we must remember.
utgår ifrån den FN-ledda processen som baseras på vetenskaplig grund, som utgår från en bedömning att vi ska försöka begränsa utsläppen för att klara 2-gradersmålen. Det har i sin tur i förhandlingsprocessen delats upp i ett ansvar för de mest utvecklade länderna och sen för utvecklingsländer, särskilt viktigt då de snabbväxande ekonomierna, inte minst Kina. De har sagt att då bör utsläppsåtagandena i de mest utvecklade länderna ligga mellan 25-40% med 1990 som basår fram till 2020. EU var först ute, har den mest långgångna överenskommelsen om legalt bindande reduktioner om 20% fram till 2020. Det gjorde vi redan våren 2007, det första beslutet. Vi fattade sedan beslut om detta slutgiltigt vid vårt toppmöte i december 2008. Vi har sagt att med konditionalitet, förutsatt att andra utvecklade delar av världen gör motsvarande åtaganden, så för de in i den här tänkta åtagandena mellan 25-40%, så kommer EU att flytta sig till 30%. Och understryker jag att detta erbjudande gäller fortsatt. Men det kräver alltså att de mest utvecklade länderna i världen gör motsvarande åtaganden. Särskilt viktigt i USA. Men det handlar också om Kanada, det handlar också om de andra OECD-länderna, de som finns på annexettlistan. Så vi kommer att avvakta och se om det sker en förflyttning under tiden som Köpenhamnsmötet pågår och ha det som utgångspunkt för vår bedömning. Viktigt var att till det också nu kunna tillföra finansieringsstöd både för de här tidiga pengarna som vi nu har presenterat, 2,4 miljarder euro per år 2010-2012, men naturligtvis också vår avsikt att ta vår andel av de pengar som behövs på medium lång sikt, alltså när det gäller 2020.
Money time for two more questions, Thomas, 2020.
Thomas Miglierina, Swiss Radio Television. What do you think of the threat of the financial industry to move to other financial places outside the European Union, like Switzerland, because of these discussions on new tax and decisions made? And do you think there is a need to discuss it with the governments of these countries? Thank you.
What I can say is that precisely the conclusion of the European Council is to propose a global financial transaction levy. Very important to be global, for the reasons you have underlined. Certainly, we expect other important financial centers to operate on this. This point is very important. Precisely, it will not be fair that some impose a very, let's say, heavy burdens and others don't do it. The purpose of the G20 exercise is precisely to build consensus for a global agreement on financial regulation and financial supervision, at least some level of agreement. That is why that process was initiated. If not, we'll have other problems. So that's, I think, the reason why the European Council insisted on the concept of a global financial transaction levy. Now, if some countries want to have some specific arrangements in Europe that go beyond this, they can do it. But there should be at least a level playing field, at least a minimum, so that we can have, so that we can avoid, let's say, unfair competition.
Martina de Ritorto, El País. A question for every one of you. One for, first one for Prime Minister Reinfeldt, please. Dealing with the 20-30%, given the fact that the 30% has already been agreed, when and how is going to be decided that the European Union is ready to increase to the 30%? Will be decided in Copenhagen, and there will be an official summit there or here? And for President Barroso, you last night spoke of a informal summit in February. Could you please elaborate on that? Thank you.
The decision we took already at Spring Council 2007 is conditional. It's an offer. Europe will move from 20-30% if other developed parts of the world will make the same contribution. We are, of course, interested to see these contributions. The Copenhagen process in itself has made many countries put figures on the table. Without the Copenhagen conference, I don't think we would have seen that. We welcome this. But when it comes to Annex 1 countries in the OECD, there are still countries like United States, Canada, for instance, who do not have mitigation efforts with counting with 1990 as base year, which is at the level required. When we look at United States figures, it's actually 4 or 5% reduction target, when Europe already has taken legally binding targets for 20% reduction. So it's an offer, but it's conditional. Therefore, we must see a movement on other developed parts of the world before Europe is ready to move. Yeah, but, well, we will show flexibility and ability to take decision if that movement is going to happen.
Regarding the informal council, it was decided to have an informal European Council in February, precisely to have an in-depth discussion about the economic strategy for the future. As I've said yesterday already, we started this discussion, and I very much welcome this because, as you know, I have put forward some ideas. In fact, there is now a document for discussion, a working document of the Commission for European Union 2020 strategy. And a very important point from my perspective is to have the full ownership of the European Council. We want the successor of the Lisbon strategy to be owned by the European Council, based, of course, on the proposal of the Commission, but owned by the European Council, so that we have more commitment. This is not just for finance ministers or for any other specific council of ministers. And that is why yesterday it was agreed to have, before the Spring Council, the normal Spring Council, where we discuss the economic affairs, formal one, of course, during the Spanish rotating presidency, to have another one, an informal, to have an open discussion about the main economic challenges for the future and also for this new strategy. And in fact, we are already launching that debate. Well, I'm telling you, next week I will be in the European Parliament discussing some elements of this as well. And I think it is extremely important that heads of state and heads of government discuss among them and with the Commission what will be the future of this strategy. That is why, if everything goes as planned, we will be in conditions during the rotating Spanish presidency in the Spring Council to adopt at least the main guidelines of the European Union 2020 strategy.
That will conclude this press conference. Thank you very much for coming to this last summit of the Swedish presidency. Thank you.